You're listening to the Wool Academy podcast. This is episode number 26. Hello and welcome. My name is Elizabeth Van Delden, and once a week we talk to an industry expert from the wool industry supply chain, from farm to fashion and beyond, delivering strategies and insights to be successful in wool and showcasing those beautiful stories wool has to tell. Today's guest is Debbie Liffman. Debbie is the product director at Finisterre. Finisterre is a Cornwall-based clothing brand born from needs of hardy British surface, offering functional and sustainable product with a strong sense of style for those who share a love of the sea. Debbie has worked at Finisterre for 9 years after previously working as a designer in high street fashion brands. As product director at Finisterre, she heads up all areas of the Finisterre product, from design, fabric development, supplier sourcing, through to buying. Welcome, Debbie. It's great to have you on the show today.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Let's just start by you telling us a little bit more about the company Finisterre and the work that you do.
Okay, yeah, no problem. So Finisterre, as you've said already, is based in Cornwall. And I think that's really central to sort of our the impact of our environment and the product that we create. So we're very, very fortunate to work and live in a beautiful part of the world. And this really, I think, has a very important impact on our design and product inspiration. So it's a place where we get a lot of weather. We get a huge amount of weather. It can be very sunny in the morning and raining by the end of the day. It's very exposed. We're on a cliff edge, so there's a lot of wind. So this is a brilliant product testing ground. So we make waterproof jackets, warm insulated clothing. And we have a huge obsession with wool. We use wool in the sort of traditional format in our jumpers, also our merino base layers, but also we use it in very surprising areas like outerwear and jeanswear. And wool is fantastic from a warm point of view, as well as all the obvious benefits, antibacterial, cooling, etc. But from a Cornwall Finisterre point of view, it is just a perfect fibre for everyday, you know, comfort and warmth. And Cornwall is the best testing ground for it, really. So that's our sort of positioning in Cornwall. And also the connection that we have, as you said, our brand has a love affair with the sea and a very strong connection to the water, to surfing. So again, being in Cornwall, this is absolutely key to the brand as well. So from a product testing point of view and an emotional connection to the sea, it's another reason why we have a very strong sustainable ethos, because the ocean, whether it be marine plastics, waste on the beach, or just generally being inspired to go for a walk in the natural environment, you know, it's Cornwall's pretty important to Finisterre and to who we are.
Okay, and tell us a little bit more about your target audience. Who are they?
So our target audience at Finisterre, we don't really think of ourselves from a sort of targeted age point of view. We don't pigeonhole the age of our customer. But I think what I would say about our customer is they are all driven through from a product point of view. I would say through this quality and through the functional nature of our product. It has to work. You know, we have a product that has a sort of reason for being and a fit for purpose. But also I think there's a real sort of conscious mentality of our customer base. They're very switched on. They're very aware. They want to understand where things have come from, what the backstory, the narrative and the romance is behind all of our products and our brand.
And you mentioned earlier that environment is very important, and from your website I gathered that you have these three values, which are product, environment and people. And tell us how these three values work together when it comes to developing the products that you are in charge of.
Yeah, for sure. So I think in terms of our sustainability ethos, that's very much at the heart of the company. As as you've referred to, product, environment, people are the three points of commitment of the brand that have been there since day one. And they really are entrenched in the brand. You know, I think it's not sort of, we haven't sort of thrown on a sort of CSR policy at the end of it and, you know, sort of ticked a few boxes. It really is the sort of, you know, one of the main reasons and impetuses behind the brand. And it has been there from the beginning. And I think it really does, it sort of filters down throughout all aspects of the brand. I think from a product development and sourcing point of view, it's really about reducing our impact or making the least impact possible when it comes to the environment part of those, the three points of commitment. It's, we look to fibres and to processing and to whether it be whatever the textiles we're going to use within our products, we will really, really look at where they come from, why is it the right fibre, and can we look at alternatives? So if it really needs to be a natural fibre, can we get in organic, or if it's going to be from an animal fibre, it's really making sure we have all the information in terms of its traceability, its transparency, so we understand the process and we can say with confidence the background of that product and those textiles. And from a people point of view, I think people, this is incredibly important to the brand, whether it be the people who directly work at Finisterre, but it's also our customers. So we have a hugely engaged customer base. So people are central to Finisterre. We get a huge amount of feedback from our customers, which we will, and it will go into the improvements and the evolution of our products. You know, good and bad feedback. We really do listen to it. And it's also the people at the heart of bringing the product to life. So that's the manufacturing base and the suppliers. So I think the thing that really brings the product, the people and the environment together is information and communication. We really try to investigate our supply chain and we talk and communicate to our customers. We're very nosy, inquisitive as a team of people. And it's all about trying to improve the product, improve the service, you know, and just make the best job of it we can.
And may I ask, how do you actually then talk to your customers? How, like, what are the different channels of how you talk to them?
So we're Finisterre predominantly an online company. So we began 15 years ago through online in the early sort of days of e-commerce. And so we have a very sort of lively an interactive online platform for discussion through our blog, which is called Broadcast. But more recently, in the recent years, we've really got into retail. And I think retail is a really exciting area for Finisterre because it allows us to speak to our customer, to engage, you know, face to face, for them really to hold the product in their hands, to ask questions, to give ideas. And so I think the newest and most exciting point of customer engagement, I would say, is through our events. So those events may be photography events or surf events, but equally they are sort of engagement events. And we'll have some beers and we get the customers in and we have a chat about the new product and we get feedback and repair service, whatever. So yeah, I think if events and actual face-to-face engagement is the sort of, for us, it's funny, for Finisterre, because we did online first, the actual face-to-face consumer interaction is newer for us and really, really exciting because we've got lots to say and lots to hear.
Yeah, and I think I read in one of your blog posts that it took like several years for, were you developing a wetsuit or something like that? So maybe give us an idea how long then this evolution of product development can take until you have the final best product that you want to achieve.
Absolutely. So I think the development of a wetsuit is one, particularly for a brand that is born from surfing, is an extremely important product. And it's all based on customer feedback and our own team, whether it be Tom Kay, who's the founder here, who's a huge surfer, testing it daily, you know, putting it through its paces, but also our ambassadors and just everyday people. So we have a wetsuit tester program where we gave 150 suits to key sort of advocates of the brand, key surfers, but very much normal people. You know, whether some of them were fishermen and some of them were in Ireland and very, very cold spots, and some of them were up the road, you know. So we canvassed a lot of customers, and it's very important to us that we take on board that feedback from customers in the improvement of our products. So something like a wetsuit is, it's sort of 3-4 years in the making. Obviously something like a more simple product like a t-shirt is more based around fit and quality, and going to see the factories and see the suppliers. But I think every product takes at least a year to come to life. It's quite a long process. But because we don't really believe in sort of trend for trend's sake, I would say that once our products come to life, they then have quite a slow evolution, where they evolve over the next, you know, several seasons. We don't sort of bin a design or a product very quickly and move on to something else. We sort of learn from both customer feedback, whether it be sales or actual feedback, to the improvement of the next version.
Okay, that's super interesting, and kind of the contrary to the latest fast fashion environmental pollution kind of craziness.
Absolutely, yeah.
And now let's move back to wool. As you just talked about your product development process, tell us how you got involved with wool. And we've also already talked to Leslie Pryor, and there's a connection with Finisterre. So tell us a little bit about the journey that you had with wool, and especially also with Leslie.
Okay, yeah. So I think our connection with wool is born out of just wearing it, if I'm totally honest with you. So I think if you've been in the ocean, the British Ocean, more importantly, but a lot of Europe is a fairly chilly place most of the year to be in the sea. When you get out of the sea, and you put on some cotton trousers, or you sort of try to slide over your skin some man-made fibres, it can feel very uncomfortable. It can feel quite sort of clingy and friction, and it's just not very pleasant. And actually, you're looking to be as warm and comfortable as soon as possible. And so I think just through a sort of trial and error, we were wearing wool. It made a lot of sense. It was soft to the touch. It glides over your skin if you've got sort of clammy skin after the sea. It feels warm, you know, when you're looking to get warm as quickly as possible. Then it's a very, very versatile fibre. So quickly afterwards, you feel comfortable. You don't feel too warm. You feel, you know, your skin is breathing. So it was just a sort of sensible fibre for us, I think, more than anything. We didn't go into wool because we wanted a premium fibre. We weren't interested in its sort of noble fibre aspect of wool. It just is a very, very comfortable fibre when you come out of the water, or you've been for a long walk. In Cornwall, we have all weathers, so it's just a very versatile fibre. So I think it just made sense for Finisterre wool more than anything. And then we started to get very interested in British manufacturing about a decade ago, and we were investigating British wool more, and could we obtain British Merino. And fairly quickly we sort of found out that British Merino didn't really exist, and actually most of Merino comes from Australia and New Zealand, and you know, it was a hard thing to come by, if not completely impossible. But then we chanced upon, I think it was a blog, just sort of trawling online. And we found out about a project with British Merino was underway to try to rear British Merino again. But then sadly, as we read down We realised that actually the project had run out of funding and it was over. And then again, complete by chance, we found out that in fact it wasn't completely over, because a lady called Leslie Pryor, who lives only about 100 miles away from us, she had actually bought up some of the last remaining sheep from this programme. So about a decade ago, we went up to see Leslie up on her farm in Denham, that's Leslie Pryor, and had an incredible meeting with her. She's one of the most incredible people I've ever met. And I think that was when we started to really understand wool. I think we liked wool and it worked for us, but we didn't really truly understand wool until we met Leslie. And I think one of the most powerful things, that just from a knowledge-based point of view, is talking to a farmer about wool. That's how you find out about wool, because it's an animal-derived fiber as opposed to polyester or cotton. You can't do it all at factory stage. You've got to understand the animal, speak to the farmer to get the best wool you can. So that sort of led us on a journey over the last decade to use wool more widely across our range. We're extremely committed to the Beaumont project. We buy up all of Leslie's Beaumont flock. We buy all the fleece when they are sheared. And the Beaumont product is all British. It's scoured, processed, spun, dyed and knitted all in the UK. And it's hugely dear to us as a project, because it really brings together, I think, from a product, people, environment point of view, the mutual passions from farm all the way through to customer.
And if I remember correctly, that in the beginning, you then, if you bought the whole flock, you had very little wool, and since then the flock has grown, and each year you probably have more wool available. Is that how it is?
Yes, it's. I think when we first began working, I think we were able to get 50 jumpers made because of the size of the flock. I think now we're up to about 250 sheep, which it still only allows for about 300 to 400 pieces across men's and women's jumpers. Excitingly, this year in 2017, we have actually developed a Beaumont shirt. But it's a very, very small amount of product. And it's quite a nice part of what we do, in a way. I suppose it really is slow fashion, in terms of, as a brand, Finisterre is growing. We've been growing sort of steadily over the last 15 years. And the Beaumont project is what it is in terms of growth. We can't speed it up any more than we want to. We could blend the fibre. You know, we could do a half-half, or we could start breeding the sheep with more sort of common breeds to get more fibre. But then that completely defeats the object of the entire project. So it's quite a satisfying project to say, well, I'm sorry we sold out very early. I'm sorry you didn't get that jumper, but there aren't enough sheep.
Yeah, no, but I think that's good. It kind of forces you to be patient. But at the same time, you're creating a very valuable and, scarce product, which is also, from a marketing perspective, always good to have as well. So,
absolutely. Really nice. Very special. Hugely special. Unique.
Yeah. And when you probably also work with other wool besides Beaumont, are there any challenges that you face when you work with wool in your product development?
Yes, I think we use wool in a lot of our products, from quite surprising parts of our line. So we use it in denim and we use it in outerwear. And I think one of the biggest things we find is, once we get a fabric working with wool in it, it's phenomenal. It's a great fabric. We don't have any issues with it. And it's, very good, high quality fabric. But I think the problem we find is getting suppliers to try wool, actually. So people are very surprised when we say, well, that polyester fabric there, that's a outerwear fabric, a waterproof fabric, could we put wool on the inside? Could we bond it with wool, or could we put in the weft a wool yarn? Most suppliers are very surprised, and that when you ask them do you have any wool in your range, or could we develop this fabric in with wool? They're quite surprised, and a lot of them are quite reticent to do so, I think because wool can be considered quite a delicate fibre, and there may be high wastage, and you can't spin it as high, or you can't dye it to such high temperatures. So I think there are limitations, but actually we've found that when we have tried and we've got passionate suppliers to support us to use wool more, actually we've found that the fabric's been hugely successful. So I think there is a bit of a fear from a supplier point of view to try wool. And I also think there can be a bit of a fear from a customer point of view that they think wool is overly delicate and they won't be able to look after it, or it's hand wash or dry clean only, or that it's gonna pill or bobble or be scratchy and itchy to the skin, which I think is just a point of education. I think there's good wool and bad wool, same as any other fibre. But I think when you use wool in a quality fabric, in a quality product, and you talk to the customer about how to care for that product, actually, you know, that you end up with a product that lasts for a long time. You don't have to wash as often, you know, and it's just a bit of understanding, I think.
And do you then educate your customers, like through the website, about wool, or how do you do that?
We absolutely do our best to. I think you always get a customer who will wash something and tell you that they follow the washing instructions and it's 30 degrees on a wool cycle and it'll come in like baby clothes. And so I think sometimes there is an element where people, you know, won't read a wash care label, or they won't read it online. But in general, I would say that our wool products are as easy care as they can be. We try to be to use the most versatile and hardy wool. We don't use so much of the super fine and the ultra fine and the cashmeres, because surfers and active outdoor customers don't iron and press and look after in mothball bags their product. We want our product to be used and loved and worn, you know, out there in the environment. So I think some of it is that we try to make our product as easy care as we possibly can, and we do our best to educate in terms of how to look after your clothing. Because some customers, I think, have we've sort of come from a consumer behavior where we have rights, and we know best as customers. But actually, it's really refreshing when you talk to a customer and they say, you know, they may say, oh, I've got some holes in my socks, or I've got a bit of a tear in the edge of my jumper or something. They want their money back. Actually, when you talk to them and you engage and you say, well, actually, that's a perfectly good garment, that can be stitched up, that can be repaired, and it will look good as new. People are quite surprised by that. So I would say the way we interact with our customer is very much, well, you know, if you bought that product and you love that product, look after it, and actually, you know, try and get the best out of it. Talk to us about how to improve and care for your product.
Yeah, and that brings me to one of my last questions, that you actually offer a repair service. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So our repair service has been here for 4 or 9 years. It was actually one of the first things that I did. I used to do it of an evening. And it's sort of quite an organic part of the business. It's quite natural, really. It just started happening. As I said, our customers are very engaged, and they are, you know, they're supporters of the brand, really. So they, when they buy into something, they really love their gear, and they're quite sad when something goes wrong. So that something goes wrong could be a small tear, or it could be a flaw in the product from our point of view. But equally, what we see quite commonly is, you know, people go for a walk and they tear their jacket on some barbed wire fencing or something, and the insulation may come out, or, you know, it could just be general wear and tear. And they come back to us and they show us show us a product and say, oh, look, I've got a little hole here. So it just prompted us quite naturally to say, well, we could probably fix that, actually. That's not such a problem, you know. Some things are tiny, very small little darns. Some of them are patches, and some of them are, you know, huge jobs. They're like zip repairs. But actually, we try to do all of it in-house. We offer a wash and reproof service as well, so that waterproof jackets and insulated jackets, for example, can go on for, you know, there's no reason why they couldn't go on for 10, 20 years. So we reproof the water repellency back into our gear. We darn those holes, you know, whatever it will be. So that's a service that's in-house, and it's also within our retail outlets as well. And it's really, really important to us as a brand, not only because of that customer engagement and from a sustainable point of view, but also because it really allows us to learn and evolve that product that I mentioned previously. We learn from a product. If it fails in any way, we need to know that if we're planning to evolve it. And it means we can make little improvements every year or every season to that product, so that if something has gone wrong before, you know, we learn from it and we improve it based on that customer feedback. So it's really, really important. And it's really nice as well, because you see product come back that you remember from 5 years ago, still looking great and loved by the customer. And some of it just, you know, is absolutely pristine. You realize how much people do care for their stuff. So it's one of the best things, actually.
Well, I love that, and I love this two sides of it, that on one hand it's a great customer service, and on the other hand it's also good kind of product research for you to, as you said, develop the product and make it even better. And I think you did it already 9 years ago, but now more and more companies, I think, isn't Patagonia also offering a repair service now?
So yes. I believe more and more companies will start to. I think it's also, as well as it being the right thing to do, I think it's good business sense. You know, I think that's when the best sustainable ideas sort of get good uptake, is because they make good business sense as much as anything else.
Yeah, great. And you said you have retail stores, and they are mainly in the UK, or where are they based?
Yes, so we are flagships in London, in Covent Garden, and we also have a fairly new store in Bristol, in Park Street. We've got a few new openings for 2017 and a few more for 18. We're not trying to take over the universe, but it is a really, as I said earlier, a really sort of fun, progressive element of what we're doing through our retail offering. And that's all based in the UK at the moment, but we've got a hugely international customer base because we're based online. We see parcels go out to some of the most unlikely places. America's quite a big market for us, as well as Germany and France and Spain. So yeah, all over, really. I like to think there's a little bit of Finisterre all over the globe.
That's great. And I think that also is a very common trend right now, that brick and mortar stores obviously had to go online, and then at the same time online stores also see the value in having brick and mortar stores. So I think that's
absolutely I think retail is moving into a really exciting phase, actually, where it's much more experiential. So the customer isn't just going in to buy something. That transaction is so easily done on your tablet or your phone quickly online. Why would you go to the bother of going into town? But actually, I think good retail has to change and is changing more and more to be about the engagement, the human interaction, you know, the warmth of hanging out with other people, events, whether it be sort of artistic events or just fun, you know, music events or whatever. So yeah, good retail, I think, is on the rise, and bad retail will decline.
Yeah, indeed. Well, that was all for us today. Before we close, what is the best way for people to connect with Finisterre?
So the easiest way to connect with Finisterre would just be to pop online. So that's at www.finisterre.com. and also to engage with our newsletter and our blog, which is called The Broadcast. So you can really get under the skin of the brand as well as the product. Or if you live in Bristol or London, please do pop into one of our stores, have a coffee, have a chat, and have a look around.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Debbie, for your time today. I thought it was really interesting, and we will make sure to link to all the websites and the blog, etc., on the show notes so that people can find you very easily. And that's all for today, and I wish you all the best for continuous slow growth as you like it.
Lovely. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Hopefully you enjoyed today's interview with Debbie Lofman from Finisterre. To find out more about Finisterre and Debbie, you can visit the show notes at elizabethvandelden.com/026. Once again, visit elizabethvandelden.com/026. We love that you're listening to this podcast. Make sure you also connect with us on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. See you there, and bye for now.